With our special guest, Peter Schiff, this hour, we'll take your phone calls with him as we talk about the financial implosion on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Back with Peter Schiff. Peter, the internet, I want to get your reaction to the strength of the internet, companies like Amazon and Alibaba, and what they've been doing to bricks and mortar retail stores.
Yeah, well, you know, certainly Amazon, you know, Amazon recently posted a huge loss the most recent quarter. And not only do they have a huge loss, but their margins, right, which is, you know, just on their price relative to their costs, were the lowest in the history of the company. And so Amazon, despite the fact that the shareholders have gotten rich, the company is losing money. And they're losing money because their prices are too low. But what they're doing by basically losing money, they are driving out a lot of the smaller competitors. They're making it a lot harder for smaller online businesses and brick and mortar businesses to make any money.
That's right.
You know, one of the reasons that consumer prices aren't rising even faster is because you have a big company like Amazon out there that is selling their products so cheaply. And how can Amazon stay in business if they're losing all this money? Well, they can keep selling stock, you know, because Wall Street will keep buying their stock, hoping that one day they're finally going to make money, even though they haven't done it yet. There are all sorts of internet companies that still haven't made any money, yet they exist on hope. But a lot of these companies will never make money, because I believe if Amazon actually raised prices high enough to make a decent return on its equity, a decent profit, they would lose a lot of their customers. And so they can't do that. So they have to keep – it's kind of like with the Fed. People think, well, the Fed can raise interest rates. No, they can't. Well, Amazon can't raise prices. They can't make a profit, so they have to pretend that they can make a profit. Now, I think Amazon is great for the customer, right? I shop on Amazon because they give me everything so cheap.
And you don't have to you don't have to park. You don't have to – if you don't need it right away, it's perfect. They deliver it right to your door.
Oh, yeah. Look, sign up for Amazon Prime, and they'll ship you everything for free. You know, they even have free shipping out to Puerto Rico, which, I mean, how much does that cost? You know, I got a place in Puerto Rico. I was just out there. I mean, I happened to be in the Cayman Islands for a few days doing a conference, but I've been spending some time in Puerto Rico. You can go there, you can get stuff on Amazon. They'll ship it for free. And by the way, if people want to know why I'm in Puerto Rico, you know, there's a website they can go to, ustaxfreezone.com. You know, I know my dad is in jail for not paying taxes. But if you don't want to pay any U.S. income taxes and you don't want to be subject to Obamacare either, there's a way to do it, right? Go to ustaxfreezone.com, and there's a half-hour free video that you can watch that'll show you how you can pretty much zero out legally, not have to worry about dealing with the courts like my dad. You can actually move to this tax-free zone in America and not have to pay capital gains taxes, taxes on your dividends, and you can lower your tax on your business income to 4%. From, you know, people are paying upwards of 50% if you're running a business in California or where I live in Connecticut, the government's taking half your money. You move to the America's tax-free zone, and they're only taking 4%.
I want to ask you about Facebook, Peter, then we'll take some calls. I mean, they're sitting on billions of dollars of cash and investments and receivables. How in the heck did they develop and get so much money? What a business model. Yet I don't know anybody who has bought something from Facebook, an ad on Facebook.
Most of Facebook's cash came from selling stock to investors. But Facebook does make money, right? They do have advertisers that are advertising on Facebook. But, you know, one of the problems for Facebook is that, you know, all these internet sites to me are fads, in that they become popular and then something else comes up. You know, there's not a lot of barriers to entry on the internet. That's one of the reasons it's so great. I mean, you can start a company and it can flourish. And you know, Facebook, remember, was only there because, you know, they used to be MySpace, and then, you know, people stopped using MySpace and they ran Facebook. You know, some of the people who are getting unhappy with Facebook are the young people, because it's not cool anymore when your grandparents are on Facebook and now your grandparents are checking out your Facebook page. And now there's a lot of advertising, which, of course, you know, the way these online companies grow is they give away their products for free. And when they give it away for free, they get a lot of people using it. But now, eventually, they're under pressure to make money, and now they have to start advertising, which means, you know, it's not really free anymore because you've got to be bombarded by all these ads.
Well, yeah, but here's my point.
You just migrate to another
business. Has anybody bought a car off of Facebook? What do they buy?
Like, I don't know. I got a Facebook page. I'm on YouTube. I'm on the internet. I've never bought anything. I don't even notice the ads at this point. They're kind of like oblivious to me. And sometimes I have to click little X's to get rid of them. But I never, it's kind of like swatting flies. You know, like you ever see these kids in Africa? You know, they have these flies on their face, but they just, you know, they swat them, or they
come right back.
Notice them. I don't even notice the ads. You know, I don't know when advertisers are going to figure out that nobody cares about these ads.
Let's take some calls here for you. We'll go first and foremost to Andy in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. Andy, you're on the air with us.
Hi, great show, George. Yes, I have to ask Peter two questions real quick. Does he believe that the absolute absurd and ridiculous economic policies of this administration and others preceding him are being done out of absolute stupidity, or is it by design for the ultimate goal of this world government? And secondly, I'd like to get your vision of a economic meltdown that leads to a stock market crash and a worldwide depression. What do you envision, in your opinion, is going to happen in the cities and to the little people?
First of all, I don't think that our political leaders are deliberately trying to destroy the country. They're not smart enough to do that, but they're going to do it, you know, by accident. I think what they are trying to do is get elected and get reelected and therefore do what's politically popular. And so what they do is they kick the can down the road. They want to postpone the pain until after the next election, even if everything that they do to postpone that pain makes the pain worse. They don't care as long as they can get elected one more time. So, you know, there are some people that maybe even understand that the policies are destructive and they don't care. And there are other people that actually believe that they're going to work. So there is some ignorance there, and there's some dishonesty. But I don't think anybody really wants to destroy the country. I mean, you know, that's not going to, you know, benefit anybody. But, you know, people are just doing what's in their own self-interest. And unfortunately, that's what's destroying us. And as far as talking about a stock market crash, if the government did the right thing, the stock market would crash. So would the real estate market. We'd have a huge depression because we have to get rid of all the problems. See, when you have the central bankers, the government, they want to fight off recession. But that's like a drug addict not wanting rehab, right? Because he doesn't want to detox. He wants to stay high. And maybe staying high is more enjoyable than going through rehab. But going through rehab is a necessary process if you want to be healthy and kick your drug habit. So unfortunately, we are so drugged up on government stimulus, and our economy is so screwed up, right? We have so much reckless spending and speculation. We're not saving. We're not investing. We're not producing. The economy is all screwed up because of the government. And in order to get it right, in order to heal so that we can have a real economic recovery, so that we can benefit everybody, not just a few people that are speculators. If we want to do that, then we're going to have to go through this withdrawal symptom. We're going to have to go through this recession, which unfortunately is going to be very bad now because the government has delayed it for so long. But nobody wants to let that happen. Right? Because anytime the economy starts to turn down, we got to print more money. Anytime we start coming off of our government-induced high, we need more drugs. And so what's going to happen is the stock market isn't going to crash because the government won't let it anymore. The government's not going to let anything crash. They're just going to print too much money. So what happens is the dollar crashes. And so in real terms, right, in terms of, say, gold, the stock market will crash. But most people won't be able to take advantage of it because they don't own any gold. All they own is paper, right? And for people that own paper, the price of everything is going to go up. But if you own gold, the price of everything is going to go down. And that's what you want. And, you know, by the way, you know, I have a company. We do sell gold. ShiftGold.com is the name of my precious metals company. And I think we have about the lowest prices you'll find on the internet. And what we don't do is sell numismatics. It's just bullion, bars, and coins. And people need that for real money. Because we're going to get a crash, but not in terms of paper.
Peter, as you look toward the future after this crash, is there a, you know, light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, hopefully. I mean, right now there's just the oncoming train, right? Whatever light people see, that's really what it is.
Yeah, coming right at them.
But hopefully beyond that oncoming train, maybe there's actual light way off in the distance. Because I am somewhat hopeful. In fact, you know, my most recent book, which is the one that I suggest people really need to read, which is The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, the fully revised edition. I just revised that book recently with about 100 new pages. But I still am optimistic that after we have this economic implosion, which we're going to have, I mean, there's no getting away from this. I mean, we're going to have this real crash that's coming. We're going to have a currency crisis and a sovereign debt crisis. And yes, you should be prepared for that financially. But I do hope that this will be the catalyst for a real economic renewal, a real change in course. You know, people voted for change when they voted for Obama, but they didn't get change. They got Bush's policies on steroids. You know, what we need is real change, which is free market capitalism. We need to just start demolishing big chunks of the federal government, abolishing departments and agencies, getting rid of all these rules and regulations that have undermined our productivity, get rid of a lot of these taxes, get rid of a lot of these government programs, and unleash a free market revolution in the United States and let capitalism rebuild what socialism destroyed. And it can happen. I mean, it works, and it can work quickly. But I think that we're going to need, things are going to have to get really bad before we have the guts to try it.
Next up, we go to Stonewall in Montana. Welcome to the show, Stonewall. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Mr. Norrie. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. I called because you guys were talking about call in and talk about what you've been doing, this an economic downturn and whatnot. I've done a lot of things, entrepreneur, was in land development, music business, and so forth and so on. Moved to Montana and got into the medical cannabis business. And
how's that doing for you?
Well, in 2011 out here, they changed the law a little bit. So we've been kind of still open under an injunction from the judge.
Okay.
So it's very sparse now. But a lot of other states are taking off.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they are.
A lot of those states are really doing economically well, tax-wise, and other things. But in Montana, not so much. Most of my patients are cancer patients, and I just try to take care of them the best I can. But, you know, I had a place on Main Street for 2 years. They changed the law, and, you know, it kind of wiped a lot of people out, legitimate business people that, you know, really in 2011, things were different in Montana.
Well, you know, the biggest obstacle that businesses face is government. In fact, entrepreneurship is at a record low in America. I think we've had the fewest number of businesses that are being created, you know, annually. There's just no way to overcome all the government obstacles. And by the way, the government is the biggest barrier for people to get jobs. I mean, the government has made it so difficult to employ people, so expensive to employ people. And now they're raising the minimum wage even higher. It's that much harder for young people, unskilled individuals to ever get a job, to ever get the on-the-job training that they need to eventually be able to get higher wages. You know, it all sounds great. Yes, you know, let's have a minimum wage, but all it does is make it illegal for large classes of people to ever work. And why would you want to pass a law making it illegal for people to work when people need to work and people need to get skills and on-the-job training, and you're basically outlawing that? Meanwhile, we have 50% of teenagers unemployed in certain communities. I mean, this is a disaster, but it's not.
And that's dangerous, too, Peter.
It's man-made.
You know, I want to get your reaction to what could be a severe problem, not only for the St. Louis area, but also for the nation. And that is when the grand jury decision is reached on the police officer who shot and killed an unarmed African-American youth who was 18. Now, I'm not going to argue the merits of the case because we really don't know what happened.
We pretty well do. I mean,
let me explain that. I mean, we don't know if he was running toward the officer or if he was running the other way. I mean, we have two different pathology reports. But
there are more witnesses, George. There are more witnesses who have testified before the grand jury that Brown attacked Ferguson, right?
Right, and right. Reach for his gun.
All the forensic evidence, and it just makes sense. I mean, there's no way that a guy, a policeman, is just gonna go gun down somebody in cold blood. He's not gonna shoot a man who's got his arms in the air saying, "I surrender, don't shoot." And in fact, from the ballistic evidence, that they concluded that his hands couldn't have been up in the air. His hands were down. He was running towards the officer when he was shot. And the first time he was shot is when he was in the car and he was shot in the hand from a point blank range because he was going for the officer's gun. I mean, the reality of it is Michael Brown was a criminal. He had knocked off a liquor store and he assaulted a policeman. He probably attempted to murder the policeman. And so he was shot not because he was surrendering or because he was black, but because he was a violent criminal and because he wasn't listening to the police. That is what all the evidence and all common sense would tell you. And, you know, the crazy thing about this is the grand jury has been hearing all this evidence for months. And if they decide not to indict, it's because, not only because there's no probability that he's guilty, but I think the evidence shows that he's innocent.
Well, I suspect they are not going to indict him. That's why today the governor of Missouri is calling up the National Guard in anticipation of some problems. So here's
why. It's because the black community is going to refuse to condemn the actions of Wilson, right? I mean, what's the kid's name?
Michael Brown.
Michael Brown, right? They're not going to say, you know, I guess we were wrong. I guess we had a rush to judgment. We were racist. We just assumed that Darren Wilson was guilty because he was white, and we just assumed that Michael Brown was innocent because he was black. We did exactly what we're accusing other people. We were racist. But instead of admitting that, they're going to pretend that justice wasn't served, that the only reason that Darren Wilson wasn't indicted was because he was white, and they're going to try to make this into the even bigger racial thing, and they're going to try to elevate Michael Brown's status so that he's the new civil rights leader. You know, he was slain just like...
All right, but here's... Peter, here's my point. Hold on. Peter.
Why won't President Obama come out and say, you know what, Darren Wilson is not guilty, and it's a good thing that he wasn't indicted. It's unfortunate that this young black child was gunned down, but you know whose fault it was? What about his parents? His parents are complaining. They're the ones that raised him. If they had raised him right, he would have had some respect for authority. He wouldn't have robbed this convenience store. He would have listened to the police. He wouldn't have charged the police. Who charges a policeman when they have a gun pointed at you and they're telling you to freeze? Who charges? Who attacks a policeman through his car and starts punching him in the face and tries to take his gun? Not a kid who's raised very well. And in fact, why don't we blame the welfare state, you know, and the poverty in which these kids grow up in, and the war on drugs, and all the things that the government does to create Michael Browns, and all the Michael Browns who were born out of wedlock to women without husbands because of the welfare state? You know, this is not about racism. And and Darren Wilson didn't do anything wrong. He was doing his job. You know, but now what are we telling policemen? Hey, you can't protect yourself. You can't shoot a criminal who's trying to kill you, because if they happen to be black, well, then you might end up in jail, or you're going to have to live in hiding for like your whole life, because you're automatically guilty if you're white and you shoot somebody who's black, no matter what the circumstances are. You know, you're a racist and you're a murderer.
Here's the point, though, and we'll talk about it when I come back. Next hour, Mark Dice joins us with his latest work, Inside the Illuminati. Hey, have you had a chance yet to watch our television program, Beyond Belief? You can take a look at it for 10 days and look at everything you can by going to our website, beyondbelief.com, and fill out the information. And welcome back. I'll get your calls in just a moment here with Peter Schiff. So, Peter, here's my thoughts. It's, you know, whether the grand jury indicts or not, but instigators are coming into the St. Louis area to rabble-rouse, to try to disrupt what should be peaceful protesting and concern. I think it's going to turn into the pits of hell after what happens out there.
Well, look, we'll see. But if it does, you know, it's the fault of the media. It's the fault of the supposed civil rights leaders. Look, what's happening in Ferguson is very much like, you know, the U.S. recovery, right? The recovery is not real, and neither is this narrative of a gentle giant gunned down while surrendering by a white racist cop. That is not what happened. But nobody wants to say that because the media, everybody's afraid of being called a racist if you want to tell the truth. But all the witnesses, right, the vast majority of the eyewitnesses who testified before the grand jury, right, the ones that are speaking truthfully are afraid to come public because they don't want to snitch on Michael Brown even though he's dead. The witnesses that claim that he was surrendering are most likely lying. The main witness was his accomplice in the robbery who has a history of lying to the police. And in fact, the original stories about, well, he was shot in the back have been disproven because none of the shots were in the back, right? And they were just making up lies, but everybody wanted to believe the lies because it fit the narrative that the media wants, which is that America is racist and that blacks have to be afraid for their lives every time they walk down the street because they might be gunned down by some crazed or racist white person. When the real truth, and nobody wants to get into it, is that the biggest problem, unfortunately, for blacks when it comes to violence is that they're going to be shot or robbed or by other blacks. That is the real problem, is all the crime being committed in the black community by blacks against blacks. And no one wants to deal with that. They want to pretend, oh, the real problem is white racists. That is not the problem, right? And the more we try to pretend that it is, the real problems aren't going to get solved.
Yeah, but here's the bigger issue, too. This is going to go around the country, I'm afraid. I can feel it, Peter. This
well,
is not going to be...
Nobody wants to stop it, but, and they're going to act like they're outraged by the decision of the grand jury. And I think they might even frame it by trying to say, well, you know, there wasn't just enough evidence to indict him. You know, there was overwhelming evidence of his innocence. They could pin a medal on him as a result. I mean, he went, you know, the officer, you know, went through a terrible experience based on what was
right.
done.
I mean, they may get him for excessive force. They may do that. I mean, that you can't rule that out.
How can it be excessive force? Put yourself in the officer's situation. And all this takes place over the course of a minute. So you're in your car. Somebody just attacked you, right? Violently assaulted you, hit you in the head, and tried to take your gun away from you. Right? And he happens to be, you know, 6 foot four.
Okay, and the gun goes off.
Guy, and he's almost beat you unconscious. And now, you know, he's running, and you're trying to get him, and you pull your gun, and you say, "Halt, police, freeze." He turns around, and now he charges you. He's charging at you, and all you've got in your hand is a gun. And you know, if this guy gets me, I'm dead. Because half of the policemen that are killed with their own guns. So when you say he was unarmed, it doesn't mean he's defenseless. Now, you're standing there. This 6'4", 300-pound guy who's already tried to shoot you once is charging you. What are you going to do? Wait for him to get you? Wait for him to take your gun and kill you? Or you're going to shoot to stop him from coming?
I mean, yeah, but
it takes place quickly. You have seconds to decide. It's your life or his. And you know, if somebody puts me in a situation to choose between my life or somebody else's that I don't know who's attacking me, I'm going to defend myself.
Well, that's what people are supposed to do.
Yes, and he's a policeman. You know, if you tell the criminals, look, you don't have to listen to a policeman. If a policeman tells you to freeze and puts his gun and points his gun at you, just do whatever you want. He's not allowed to shoot you. I mean, how are you going to have law enforcement if the criminals know that the police can't shoot you?
Bottom line is, the kid should have said to the cop, "Yes, sir," when the cop said, "You're walking down the middle of the street, please leave."
Especially when he just robbed the store. You think he would be a little bit more concerned about being less conspicuous. But, of course, maybe being high on pot had something to do with all the bad decisions that this guy made, from robbing that store to walking down the middle of the street, to not listening to the policeman, to attacking the policeman, and even when the policeman is pointing a gun at him, he charged him anyway. That's how bad the decisions that this guy was making were. And I'm sure that the fact that he was smoking pot had something to do with those bad decisions. But I think a lot of it had to do with the way he was raised. In fact, look at his parents. They almost had to arrest the parents they had a big fight that broke out over who had the right to sell T-shirts with Michael Brown's picture on it.
I know.
They're all trying to profit from this. And this is the family that raised this guy.
Let's go. The family wasn't selling those T-shirts that day. That was a different group that they were chasing. Let's go to
parents that were chasing other relatives.
Right. Let's go to Mary in Salt Lake City, Utah. Mary, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I have a question on a different level, you were talking about buying gold, and you didn't mention silver. Is silver a good thing to buy at this point?
Yeah, you know, when I talk about gold, I generally mean gold and silver. I mean, they're both monetary metals, they're both precious metals, and they're going to go in the same direction. And I personally think that the upside potential in silver is actually greater than it is in gold. And so I recommend that people buy both metals. I mean, buy silver and gold, especially, you know, for your barter money. If you want to have, you know, a lot of coins, you know, 1 ounce coins, half ounce coins that are convenient for transactions in case, you know, things really get bad and we have, you know, price controls due to runaway inflation and black markets, and the things that you want to buy are not available unless you actually have real money to pay for them, because the merchants don't want to take paper that's rapidly depreciating. So there it makes sense to have, you know, some silver that you have at home.
What do you think of silver futures?
Well, I mean, if you want to, you know, gamble with
speculation,
I mean, you get a lot of leverage. I mean, I don't encourage novices to do this because, you know, the markets are volatile and people can lose a lot of money. And when you're dealing with leverage, you have to deal with timing. But with the interesting issue about the futures contracts is most of the silver and gold that's traded is in the futures market. And people who are trading futures have no intention, most of them, of ever accepting delivery of any of the gold or silver they're buying. And as a result, the volume in the paper market dwarfs the actual physical market. And so you have all these people buying silver and gold from people that don't have any silver and gold to sell and have no ability to deliver gold and silver to any of the buyers because they don't believe they're going to have to. But one day, there's going to be some smart institutions or individuals who are going to go into the futures market. They're going to buy contracts on gold and silver, and then when the contracts expire, they're not going to roll them over. They're going to ask for delivery, and you're going to have a lot of shorts who have sold gold and silver contracts that are going to get handed delivery notices, meaning, hey, you're short 1,000 ounces of gold. You need to deliver it, and here's where you have to send your bar. You know,
which they don't have, right?
It's not there, and that's going to be a real disaster, and it could actually mean that the exchanges go bankrupt. So at some point, if you buy futures, you might not actually own any gold and silver because all you own is somebody else's promise to sell you gold and silver that they don't even own themselves.
So if they don't deliver, what happens to that future contract? Does it go through the roof and you make a fortune?
Well, no. Well, they're going to have to deliver, right? Which means so they're going to have to go into the market and buy the physical, which really doesn't exist.
At any price.
Will skyrocket. But what happens is, if the individual who shorted all the gold and silver or the institution can't go into the market and buy it and they just default on their obligation, now the exchange, let's say it's the COMEX, is responsible for going out and buying the physical gold and deliver it to the longs who are asking for delivery. But where are they going to get that physical metal? I mean, look what happened when Germany tried to get some of its physical gold back from the Federal Reserve. They had to give up because the Federal Reserve kept making one excuse after another why they couldn't ship Germany any of its gold.
Right, if they even had it.
Because they don't have it, or it's been loaned out, and it's not there. So getting physical metal is a lot more difficult than just buying a futures contract because they can create those out of nothing.
Is there gold at Fort Knox?
I hope so. You better have.
I keep hearing there might not be. Joe in Las Vegas. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hi, guys. Good evening.
Hi,
Peter, I'd like to address something you were saying earlier this evening about free market, how the government should be staying out of it. Look what happened to Wall Street, and look what had occurred the moment they eviscerated Glass-Steagall. All right,
yeah,
that was the firewall. And as again,
yeah, but you have to understand,
Bush 43 was what we indicated that
if we had a free market, we wouldn't have had the bubble. The reason we have Glass-Steagall is because the government interfered in the banking system. The government insures bank deposits. That is a huge distortion of the free market. And so the minute the government insured bank deposits, they took all the free market regulation out of the banks. Because right now, no American who has a bank account cares what the banks do with their money. Nobody shops around and looks for banks that have good loan portfolios that aren't taking a lot of risk. Because the government said, no matter what,
we certainly used to, as far as us
lose it.
Because the difference
was the government screwed up the banking system, and so they wrote Glass-Steagall to try to contain the damage. So once they guaranteed the deposits, they had to have some regulations about what you do with insured deposits. And I agree with you that deregulation, in a sense of getting, you know, letting the banks gamble more with depositors' money. They shouldn't have done that unless they went all the way and took away the government-guaranteed bank accounts. They didn't do that. But the problem was the regulations they left, not the regulations they repealed. But the financial crisis was not a byproduct of the free market. The free market would have prevented it. It was because of two main things. It was the Federal Reserve keeping interest rates artificially low. The free market didn't do that. The Fed did that. It was because of the government guaranteeing mortgages and bank accounts. See, they basically told mortgage lenders, you can loan money to anybody, and if the person doesn't pay you back, the government will. And so nobody cared about lending standards. No one cared about whether or not the borrower could actually afford the house because the government co-signed everybody's mortgage. And no one cared what the banks did because the government guaranteed all the bank accounts. So it was all a byproduct of government meddling in the free market. If we had a free market, this wouldn't have happened. I mean, if people had to buy houses based on their own creditworthiness, not based on the government co-signer, if people actually had to make a 20% down payment, which is what people had to do when it was a free market, you know, we wouldn't have had a housing bubble. We wouldn't have had a financial crisis.
Will the FDIC continue, or is it going to go?
Well, I mean, the FDIC now is basically, you know, it's for everything. I mean, every time a bank fails, the government bails out everybody, not just the insured deposits, but they bail out everybody. But the reality is the FDIC doesn't have any reserves. I mean, if we let a big bank fail, there's no money there to bail out the depositors. But ultimately, the FDIC insurance is going to mean nothing, because if the big banks fail and the government has to bail them out and bail out the depositors, the money's not going to be worth anything. If they have to print up the money to bail out Bank of America and all these J.P. Morgan and all these big banks, do you think your money's going to be worth anything when you get it? You know, it'd be better to let the banks fail and let you lose a portion of your deposits than for the government to make you whole with money that doesn't buy anything.
Jackson, Long Beach, California now. Hey, Jack, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple comments. Just kind of wing my comments. Normally, I have a sheet while I'm on hold. I write down my thoughts.
Sure.
But, anyway, I'd argue that the money is already worth less. Now, that's imperative word, worth less. I have over $130,000 liquid in my personal savings account. And I know everybody's going to say, what? And I have another $15 in my checking account that I used to float. And then I have another $200 in my retirement account. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not bragging. I'm saying all that because I'm poor. I feel poor. And everybody around me,
well, you know what? You're gonna get a lot poorer if you don't do something with that cash, because government is declaring war on you. A, you're not getting any interest on your savings, and B, inflation is gonna wipe it out. So you have to avoid the inflation tax. You should be talking to one of my brokers about how to take the money in that account and protect it, right? Get it into real assets. Own companies abroad in countries like Singapore or New Zealand or Hong Kong or Norway, or, you know, places where the economies are not a complete disaster, where the central banks aren't running on autopilot. You know, you can get real assets, get dividends. You can get in some of the mining stocks. I mean, you've got an opportunity now of a lifetime in the mining sector to buy stocks that at the lowest valuations I've seen in my investing career. You don't want to go down with this ship and be the patsy left holding the bag, because it's the dollar holders, it's the savers, the people who are prudent, who are the ones that are going to suffer, because the government is there to bail out the reckless, the speculator, the debtor. And so they've got you in their crosshairs right now. You might think, oh, I'm playing it safe. I don't want to chance the stock market. You can't play it safe in a fiat currency that's about to be printed right into oblivion.
So you think, Peter, too much cash is not a good thing?
It should be. That's how an economy grows, right? What really grows an economy is when people do what this caller is doing, when they put their money in the bank, right, and they get paid interest. The bank loans the money out to a businessman who takes the money, buys equipment, right, expands his business, increases production, hires people. That's the root of economic growth. It's savings. But nobody does that because you're punished if you do that. The government steals your wealth. We have created an upside-down society where we encourage people to spend and speculate, and we pretend that that's how the economy grows. Well, it doesn't grow, and that's why the people are suffering. That's why real incomes are falling. That's why net worths are collapsing. Our living standard is going down because of this type of thinking. But yes, unfortunately, you can't save, and you can't have an economy where we punish savers. And I'm telling you, if you're saving your money, you're going to lose. You're guaranteed to lose. The government is telling you, we're going to create inflation. We're not going to have price stability. We're going to make sure that prices go up every year. We're going to make sure that any money you save is destroyed in value. And you know what? It's going to be destroyed a lot faster than people think. So people need to do something now to protect the purchasing power. Right? It's not about having money. It's about having purchasing power. You know, you can have billions of Zimbabwe dollars, but you can't buy anything.
Right.
And, you know, that might be the case one day with U.S. dollars. I don't know. I hope it doesn't get that bad. But I do think the dollar is going to lose the vast majority of its purchasing power, maybe 80 or 90% of its purchasing power, meaning prices go up 5 to 10-fold. But if your money is out of the dollar, then for you, prices aren't going to go up. That they might even come down, which is what you want.
Is your dad allowed to do interviews in prison?
You know, he did interviews in prison when he was in there a long time ago, but technically I don't think he was supposed to do it. So he's not allowed to do it. So he can't do them.
All right. That would have been great.
Yes, he'd love to be on your show, George, believe me. And he'd do the 4 hours.
Well, two more years. Anyway, Peter, give us your websites. We're almost out of time.
Oh, okay. So my brokerage firm, if you want to get into foreign stocks and bonds, it's europac.net. EUROPAC.net. My precious metals company is shiftgold.com, shiffgold.com. And again, you can shiftradio.com. You can listen to my podcast or my YouTube channel. I post all sorts of videos on there. And don't forget to read my newest book, The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, How to Save Yourself and Your Country, which, by the way, you can get cheap on Amazon. So good place.
Talking about Amazon. Peter, thanks for being on the program. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Mark Dice. His latest work, Inside the Illuminati, What Are They Up To? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.